welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, April 26, 2018. And of course, because it's Thursday, it is Therapy Thursday. And on Therapy Thursday, I always have a guest. And today, I have a special guest. Writer, artist, letterer, everything. You do everything in this comic.
Yes, I do.
Monica Munoz is joining me today from The Friendship Paradox. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. I'm glad we finally got to do it. We had a little problem last week.
Yes.
Well, we almost had a problem today. We couldn't find each other on Skype.
Well, that's Skype's problem.
Yes, because Skype is garbage. So, Friendship Paradox, if you're listening to this, is out on Thursday, so issue 4 would be coming out yesterday. We're recording in the past, so for us, it's coming out tomorrow.
Time travel!
See, it's perfect, because it has to do with the book. So, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what The Friendship Paradox is about?
Okay, Friendship Paradox, it's a female friendship book, teen drama with a sci-fi twist. It's about this girl, Rachel, or Raquel, who travels in time from the 80s to present day and meet this girl, Hope, and they start a friendship, and Hope tries to help Raquel to go back home.
Yeah, so part of the problem was after the first issue that Raquel is stuck because the little machine that she can use to travel through time broke when she was coming to the present.
That's right. She's stuck here.
So I guess we can start off. Why don't you tell me like what the inspiration for the book was? How did you come about the idea of doing The Friendship Paradox?
Well, it comes from my frustration as a fan from some TV shows that I don't want to mention, but there were these dramas that have teenage girls, and I feel like the writers forgot about them. And in my frustration, I decided to do a story just about the girls and the complicated relationship with their moms and their adults around them. And just sci-fi for fun.
Sure. How much of either Raquel or Hope is in you? Like, how much of you is those characters?
Ooh, this is terrible. Okay. I think I'm more like Hope. And in the later issues, I started to put conversations I have with my mother and in with my grandma.
Right.
Because my mom and my grandma don't get along. And it's a weird situation when you see that your mom doesn't like her mom. It's just weird. So I started to incorporate that in the story. So
I don't know how weird that is, because I don't think my mom passed away over 10 years ago. But, you know, even when she was alive, her and her mom didn't get along very much either. So I don't think that's that weird, to be honest with you.
Well, not weird in the sense that it's rare, but when, let's say, awkward. When you're in the room and you hear the things they're saying, you don't know what happened because it was before you were born. So it's this weird history they have, and you don't know that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I could see that. Okay. So the inspiration was mostly TV. I was trying to find like TV shows and comics, and I think you have a good point. Because it seems like that's the big thing in comics right now, right? Making sure that you have a lot of diversity. You have characters of different races and ethnicities. you have a lot more female writers and artists coming into the comic book market. And it is pretty important, right? Because you don't have a lot of that. And it's weird because you have so many female characters that are available to use, but it's almost like they don't get used properly. They're just kind of a prop in a story just to kind of move the story along.
Exactly. That's what bothered me in one of the shows. The mom has a love interest, and they sort of they say that the mom has to pick between her new boyfriend and her daughter. And it's like, why? Why does she have to pick? She can be a mom and have a new boyfriend. What?
No, yeah, I agree.
It's just meaning.
I agree. It's crazy. Crazy. So how much did you have to do a lot of research? What's your interest in time travel?
I did the opposite of research. I stopped watching or reading anything involving time travel, and I just decided to go with everything that I already have.
Yeah. I got to ask you, have you ever seen the movie? In English, it's called Time Crimes, but I think originally it's a Spanish movie. Cronocrímenes. You should check that out. It's kind of a serial killer story, but it's a time travel story. And this guy and his wife are moving into a new house, and the guy's outside in his yard, and he's looking off into the trees, and he sees something moving. So he goes to investigate, and he gets attacked, and he fights this guy. And trying to escape the guy, he goes up this hill and finds a house, and he goes to hide in the house. Well, as he's looking through the house, he comes upon this guy in a lab who puts him in this tub of water. And, like, something happens, and he gets out of the tub. And as the story progresses, we learn that the reason he got into that tub is because he had already been there. A different version of him from a different time came in and told him to, when he showed up, to go into the bathtub. And so he's, well, I don't want to spoil the movie, but it's really well done. You should check it out. It's really good. It used to be on. Well, I know you probably have different streaming services over there, but I know it was on Netflix here at one point. And yeah, it was really, really good.
Okay.
I love time travel stuff.
Yes.
I think you do a really good job at actually presenting, like, you never go in depth about how it is that time travel works, which I think
it makes my head hurt.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like time travel because it's almost nonsense, right? Because you can really just explain whatever you want away by just coming up with some crazy time travel theory. But I think in your book you hint at it. Like, I know at one point you show, like, this formula that Raquel's mom had created. She's trying to recreate so she can go back in time. But never, like, does it go in depth. And I think for this kind of story it really works, because as the book progresses from issue 1, 2, and 3. The time travel thing is what drives the story, but it's also kind of in the background because it really does become a book about how these two people become friends.
Yes, exactly. That's what I wanted, an excuse to have two girls there from very different worlds to hang out and be friends. And I don't want to... spoiler, but the time travel thing comes back in the later issues.
Sure.
In the final issue. And I gave it the importance of time travel.
Yeah.
Let's leave it like that.
No, that's fine. That's fair enough. But no, I thought some of this stuff was really well done. Like, in the third issue, we meet Hope's boyfriend Paco, and he's from a completely different place in society, right? So Hope is the governor's daughter, so she lives in this giant mansion. They have all this money, She's got a great life. And then Paco kind of lives on the other side of the tracks. But what I really liked was, because of that experience that he has, he can possibly fix Raquel's time travel machine. Which, like, if it was real life, it would be really weird to be like, oh, like, here's some random guy that we know, like, he'll fix the time travel machine. But in the comic itself, it works, right? Because it's just applying a skill from one place to another. And I thought that was well done. Matter of fact, I think issue 3 so far is my favorite of the bunch, because I see a lot of stuff, a lot of, like, different plot threads popping in. So we finally get to meet Hope's dad, meet his secretary, and there seems to be some kind of, maybe a relationship there, is what I got. Maybe. And I think the way that you hinted at all that is very subtle, but really well done, because it does help build this world, right?
Yeah, I think, I don't remember who I told them, my friend. I said, I keep adding characters in the fourth issue, because I want this world to feel big, not just this girl. I want you to know Paco's sisters. I want you to know where they work. I want you to know the baseball team. They have a baseball team.
Yeah. So
these little things that, honestly, if I didn't have those things, the series will be 4 issues. But I wanted a big story.
Right. So is that why you chose to do 8 issues instead of 4 or 5 like we normally see?
Yeah, because I wanted more drama.
And
I thought, okay, 4 issues, I can sort of tell the sci-fi part of my story, but I wanted the personal aspect to see these girls be friends and realize something about each other, about themselves, and a little bit of sadness and heartbreak. So I needed 8 issues.
No, yeah, I think you really hit on what I like about this, because that's the kind of thing that I generally enjoy the most in comics, is when the story is driven by characters and not by plot. Right? I mean, obviously you need to have some kind of story, right? Like, not everything can be Seinfeld, right? You have to have a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. But I think a lot of writers kind of tend to let the story guide what the characters do. And I think in this book, you do a really nice job at moving the story forward just based on how these two characters interact with each other and with the rest of the world.
I try to do that, because I'm like you. That's what I like about comics and TV and movies, to have a little bit of both, not just scene after scene after scene.
Yeah, that gets a little boring, right?
Yeah,
I agree. You do introduce a lot of interesting stuff that is kind of like it almost turns it into like a spy thriller comic, maybe in some way. Because when Raquel goes to the future, there's no record of her family. Pretty much after she goes to the future, right? Because when Hope is looking for her parents, she doesn't see anything after the 80s. And then she talks to the new head of the physics department at the university. And he's like, oh yeah, like she moved to, I don't remember where he said, like Zurich or somewhere else. And it's all kind of very hidden and secret, right? And I don't want you to spoil the story, but I'm assuming that maybe her parents are still around. And you don't have to answer. If you don't want to answer, you can say, I'm not answering.
Well, it's part of the mystery, but yeah, I kind of hinted at the idea that Raquel's parents move away. But why did they move away? I think it's the more important thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I have some ideas, and I think the way that the story is going so far, the fact that Hope is the person that found Raquel is not entirely a coincidence.
Oh.
And maybe that's kind of what the friendship paradox is, right? So yeah, it's been really enjoyable to read. And you're publishing this yourself, correct?
Yes, so by myself.
So let me ask you about the process of doing a comic by yourself, because I'm interested in doing this kind of thing.
Okay.
So first I want to ask you, because you're in Mexico, so I'm sure the comic industry is very different over there. Mm-hmm. What for somebody that wants to do comics in Mexico, like what are your options, right? Because you can't just like submit something to Marvel or DC or Image, I would assume, right? It can't be as easy as it would be here in the U.S.
I don't. Oh, it's very hard because there isn't a comic industry.
Right.
What we have here is publishing companies that translate the American comics, European comics, but original content from Mexico is very rare. There are some indie publishers whom they put up these graphic novels every once in a while.
Right.
But they tend to be more underground stuff. Mm-hmm. Or kid stuff. It's one or the other.
Right.
Like, I had a comic that it was an anthology about Ciudad Juarez and all the women that have been killed there.
Right.
So it was about that city, and I have other that is just story about kids found in a pyramid, things like that.
Right.
And those creators are creators who have been working for 20 years, who have to win prizes, to win government money to make those comics, because there is an industry.
Huh.
Is here in my city in Guadalajara, there were some comic companies, but it's just not money in it, so.
Yeah, I figured that. What's the big publisher there? Is it Comic Day that's in Mexico?
Yeah, but what's that comic they do? They do one original comic. What's it called? Camatron? I don't know. It's about a big robot.
Yeah.
And there was some controversy because they noticed the one issue was a copy of Doctor Strange. Panel by panel. And they asked the creator, and he just laughed it off. He said, "Ha ha ha! You don't know anything." And for original content, no, mostly Image comics.
Yeah, that's weird. See, I don't get to talk to a lot of people that are in comics or reading comics overseas. I do have a couple friends like in Southeast Asia. But they're transplants. They're Americans living there. And so they order their comics and they get their comics there. I know people like in the UK who get comics, but from my understanding, the market in the UK is somewhat similar to what it is here. Because you have the same distributor, right? Diamond Comics distributes in the UK, so they can get a lot of the American comics very easily. And of course they have their own scene of comics, right? Like Heavy Metal Magazine, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot different. But I'm not too familiar elsewhere. I know I talked to a guy who used to work for one of the publishing companies in Brazil, and you know, the story that you're telling me is kind of similar to what he was saying. The only way for them to do comics somewhat successfully is, first of all, they can't do single issues, mm-hmm. right? So they're pretty much putting out like trades every time. And they might collect like two or three different series from a publisher and put them together in a book where it's like, you know, four or five issues and the size of a trade paperback. And they're able to sell them that way. But they would never make any money just of a single comic.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that experience for you with Comixology? Because you're doing this through Comixology Submit. Is that easy to work with Comixology on that?
Yes. Well, for me it was easy because once that I made the comic and I made it with the specifications of Comixology, it was easy to submit the rest of the issues because you know the way. You know how long it's going to take, you know. It's relatively easy.
Interesting. Yeah, that's something that I need to look into. Because I think if I wanted to do something, this is probably where I would want to start, I think. It seems to be like the easiest way to get some eyeballs on the book.
Globally.
In this what?
Globally.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Is that different? The process different to submit in different Comixology stores? Or is it just like, here's Friendship Paradox, just put it out wherever you want?
I understand that all they care is about the language.
Right, okay.
So you submit your comic and there are, I think it's English, French, Spanish, and Japanese.
Okay.
So I'm guessing if you put the comic in Japanese, it will go to the Japanese store.
Sure.
But the others, it doesn't say where it's going to go. I'm assuming it's, hey, if you know English and you live in Spain, you can buy it.
Right. Interesting. Maybe I do need to do this. I talk to my wife all the time. I've written a couple things and I've shown it to a couple friends, but it was never something like, hey, let me just put this out and see what people think about it. But this might be pretty interesting. So you're not doing this book in print, but is the formatting for Comixology different than it would be in print, for example?
As I understand it, no.
Okay. But you need to do like the, what do they call it? The guided view, right? Or does Comixology do that for you?
No, Comixology does that. That's why they want you to have certain aspects right in a certain way, so yeah, they can just do their part. They're like a pixel thing, image quality you have to do to have the guide view good in a screen, but that's all.
Interesting. All right, so I'm assuming you completed this book, right? You have all 8 issues done.
No, I'm working. I waited to have 4 issues done until I submitted.
Right.
It took me 2 years. I have to color issue 1 3 times, but okay.
Oh, wow.
I learned a lot. I'm working on issue 7, pencils of issue 7.
Okay.
The script of issue 6 is done. I'm waiting for my proofreader to get back to me. And issue 8, it's thumbnails, but
sure.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite part about working on this book? Is it the writing? Is it the art? The lettering, the color? I mean, you're doing everything yourself. So what, for you at least, what is the most rewarding part of creating your own book like this? And what's the toughest part?
The toughest part, I think, is coloring, because it takes a long, long time. And your page has to look good to the eye, but it has to give a mood, establish a scene, if it's night, if it's day, things like that. I did a really cheap trick where Raquel always wears reds and yellows.
Right.
Hope wears blues and white. It's something easy to to make the reader realize that these are very different people. But coloring is the hardest part. To try to figure out, oh, okay, this person, what color is going to be. Okay, the skin, the sky. The most rewarding is inking, I think.
Yeah.
When I see the final page ink, and I think, oh, that looks pretty good. I like what I did there with the...
Yeah. So what was your process in doing this? Did you write an outline and try to follow that outline? Or are you just kind of doing the story, like you have an end goal, and you just kind of see where the book is taking you as you do each issue? Like, how much are you preparing for the overall process?
The story was all in my head from the very end.
Yeah.
It was all in my head. The outline, it was issue by issue. I write down what I want to happen each issue, and then I move it around or take stuff out or put things on, and then I draw it. And once this draw it, ink and color it, I go back and do the script.
Yeah, I figured because you do everything in the book, it almost seems like it gives you a lot more freedom to change a couple things here and there as you're working along too, right? Because like if you were writing and you had an artist, then you would have to be very specific with the instructions that you put or what happens in each panel, right? But because you're also the artist, I think maybe that gives you a little bit more freedom to do the story the way you want.
I like to say that I work the Marvel way with myself.
Oh.
It's sort of that way. I put the word later.
Yeah, no, I like that. All right, so issue 4 is out yesterday. I want everyone to pick it up. In fact, Monica, because I like you, what I'm going to do is all you need to do is tell me that you want to read this book, and the first 5 people, I will buy you the first issue.
Oh, that's very generous of you.
It's my new thing. I want people to try new things. Because, you know, there's so many comics, at least here, that it's really hard to, like, want to try new stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's easy to go pick up Batman or Superman or X-Men or whatever. But what about, like, indie people? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think a lot of the really strong books that are coming out right now, consistently strong, are independent books. And, you know, especially for somebody like you who... This is the first book that you're putting out here for everybody. I think it's important for people to know your work. You know, if somebody like, I don't know, Warren Ellis is doing an independent book, like, people know who Warren Ellis is, right?
Yeah.
So if you like Warren Ellis, you're going to go find the book. But for independents, it's a lot harder, and I think it's important for people to try new stuff. So that's what I'm going to do. You can do that on Twitter at Geekvine. Or you can email me, comictalktoday@gmail.com. Now, Monica.
Yes.
You write The Friendship Paradox, which is about time travel. And every week that I have a guest, I play a game. And today I'm going to play a game with you.
Okay.
Now, in, I can't remember what issue it was, like issue 1 or 2, you had a Back to the Future reference. So we're going to play a Back to the Future trivia challenge.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Are you ready?
As ready as I can be.
All right, these are all... I think they're all multiple choice. Let's take a look. All right, this is all from the first movie, the best Back to the Future.
Okay.
All right, how many miles per hour do you have to go in the DeLorean in order to travel through time? Is it 88... 33, 50, or 100?
Man, I haven't seen the movie in a long time. 50?
50 is incorrect. The right answer is 88 miles per hour.
Okay, that makes sense.
This was a thing, because back in the 80s, the speedometer never went above 88.
No.
So that's why they had it at 88. All right. In part one, when Marty McFly returns to 1985, what is different about the Twin Pine Mall? Is it that it's not there? JCPenney is closed? There's a sign calling the mall the Lone Pine Mall? Or the Target's a JCPenney?
The name change?
The name change is correct. All right. In part two, when Marty walks into the cafe 80s, what famous 80s pop song is playing? Ooh, I love 80s pop songs. Is it Jump by Van Halen? Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses? Take on Me by Aha? Or Beat It by Michael Jackson?
I'm going to go with Beat It by Michael Jackson.
Beat It is correct. All right. What 90s rocker plays Needles in part 2 and 3? Is it Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, John Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, or Kurt Cobain from Nirvana? And if you don't know, don't feel bad, because I didn't remember this either.
Okay, I don't think it's Kurt. I'm going to say the guy from the Goo Goo Dolls.
John Resnick is not correct. It's Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
He was also in that movie. I just remember him from The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he was in that too. Yeah, I don't remember him being in Back to the Future. So, good thing we have this trivia challenge. In part three, what classic movie actor does Marty pose as? Is it Jack Nicholson, Clint Eastwood, Al Pacino, or Marlon Brando?
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood is correct. Man, you're doing good on this. All right. Doc Brown's street address is named after what U.S. president? Is it Bill Clinton, John F. Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, or Richard Nixon?
Lincoln?
Abraham Lincoln is incorrect. It's John F. Kennedy. All right. In 1985, Doc lives next to what fast food restaurant? Is it McDonald's, Taco Bell, Burger King, or Jack in the Box?
Burger King.
Burger King is correct.
This one has had a lot of product placement.
Yeah, they sure do. Did you ever see, what was that, Demolition Man? With Sylvester Stallone?
Mm-hmm.
I love that, because in the future, the only restaurants they have is Taco Bell.
Yeah, I remember. And all the police wants to have, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Matter of fact, I need to watch that again. All right. What classic 1950s song does Marty play with Marvin Berry and the Starlighters? Is it Hound Dog by Elvis Presley, Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry, Great Balls of Fire by Jerry Lee Lewis, or Peggy Sue by Buddy Holly?
Johnny Be Good.
Johnny Be Good is correct. All right. What classic guitar solo does Marty play to wake George up? Is it Eruption by Van Halen, Comfortably Numb by David Gilmour, Purple Rain by Prince, or Stairway to Heaven by Jimmy Page? Man, that's a hard one. Why did I put this here?
Whew. I don't even remember the scene. Purple Rain?
You know, I think every movie should have Purple Rain, but the correct answer is Eruption by Van Halen. Purple Rain is the best song ever, though.
I don't even know Eruption? What song is that?
Yeah, I don't remember this either. I don't know. This test might be lying to me. What classic TV show are the McFlys watching during the dinner scene? Is it The Honeymooners, I Love Lucy, Happy Days, or the Johnny Carson show?
Oh, man. It can be Happy Days because they're in the 50s, right?
Right.
Happy Days was 60s, if I remember correctly.
I think that's right.
I'm going to go with Johnny Carson?
Johnny Carson is incorrect. It's the Honeymooners.
What?
Yeah, well, Honeymooners, not a good show.
I only know them because I read somewhere that the Flintstones were...
Yeah, right.
What do you call them? A ripoff?
Yep,
of the
yep. Did you ever read that Flintstones comic from like a year or 2 years ago? I think DC was putting it out.
Yeah, I didn't have the chance, but I heard good things.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good. All right. When Marty meets Goldie Wilson in the restaurant, what does he say he's going to be? Baseball player, an inventor, the mayor, or the president?
The mayor.
The mayor is correct. In part two, how does Biff become a billionaire? He robbed the bank. He wins a game show. He invested. He won a horse racing bet.
He won a bet.
That is correct. That Biff, he was sneaky. What event in Hill Valley history helps Marty get back to 1985? Is it a nuclear explosion or lightning strike on the clock tower?
A lightning strike.
Yes, that's an easy one. All right.
Just like Flash.
That's right. Just like Flash, exactly. What rock band makes a cameo in part three? Is it ZZ Top, Van Halen, Huey Lewis and the News, or Aerosmith?
I have no idea. Let's go with ZZ Top.
Oh, ZZ Top is... Wow, that is a good guess. ZZ Top is the ultimate 80s band. Everyone should know that.
Okay.
All right, last question.
Okay.
Who does Doc steal the plutonium from? Is it from Hill Valley High School, from the Libyans, the Russians, or the Germans?
The Libyans.
The Libyans is correct. Let's see here what your score is. You got 10 right. That's 387,000 points.
Wow.
You are the winner for tonight. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk. And, of course, the book is The Friendship Paradox. It's available on Comixology. There's four issues by the time you hear this. Go pick those up, and I will happily purchase a copy of the first issue for you if you want to check it out. Anywhere people can find you, Monica?
They can find me on Twitter with Moneybolis. I don't know how to spell, but...
That's awesome.
I think they can find me.
That's awesome.
And the comic itself, it's on Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook. Just look for Friendship Paradox and you'll find it.
Absolutely. And it's really fun, so I highly, highly recommend it. I love it. And I want to thank, who introduced me to this? I think Mike did, Mike Myers.
Oh, yeah, Mike.
Yeah, because I think Mike and Bill were talking about it on the Geek Brunch podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that sounds interesting. I'll check it out. So thanks to those guys for introducing me to this book. And I think that's it. If you want to get in touch with me, at GeekVine, comicstoday@gmail.com. I'll be back tomorrow with a new episode. Thanks for listening.